Patricia Johansson is a multidisciplinary artist. Her work combines art, ecology, landscaping, and functional infrastructure. Johansson works with engineers and city planners, scientists and citizens groups to create her art as part of functioning infrastructure for modern cities from San Francisco to South Korea. Johansson is currently working on The Draw at Sugar House, a functional art project that will connect Sugar House Park, Parley's Creek, Sugar House Business District, all through a beautiful pedestrian underpass. Patricia Johansson is in studio with us this morning. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Now, you're also spending the week at Westminster College here in Salt Lake City, working with students, I take it?
Yes, it's been very exciting. Very, very interesting, motivated students.
Well, they have an entire environmental center and a major. So taking what you do with art and environment and then working with the students sounds like a lot of fun.
It really is.
So let's talk about this project, The Draw at Sugar House. For those of us who aren't familiar with it, where is it? Well, where will it be? What's it intended to do?
Well, the initial idea was that it would provide a safe crossing across 1300 East, which is a six-lane highway. And the whole project was started many years ago, perhaps as far back as the early 90s, by some children, the Cope kids, who discovered Hidden Hollow, a beautiful remnant nature corridor that at that point was filled with junk. Then there was a National Endowment for the Arts competition many years later, I think in 2003, and I came out to Salt Lake to do the design. And then the design won, and so here I am back again.
So it was a competition, and that always amazes me—a an art competition for a piece of public art as well as ecology. So Hidden Hollow, most of the project not visible from the street, yet this is going to draw folks down to Parley's Creek. Tell me your elements.
Well, it is, and the whole idea of doing these projects as landmarks is that they become a kind of subtle signage that tells people who are walking along the highway how to get down to the underground crossing and get to the other side of the road. And then, of course, the discoveries on either side of the road are quite extraordinary. Sugar House Park is one of the most beautiful parks I've ever seen. And it's, of course, the exact opposite of Hidden Hollow, which is something I like very much, that juxtaposition of this totally man-made landscape with its ornamental plantings, the fact that it is a major piece of infrastructure, and yet it's so beautiful. And when you stand in Sugar House Park and you realize that that flowing topography that goes up in different levels, higher and higher, is actually different amounts of flood storage capacity, it's just stunning because you realize that there's no excuse for there being ugly infrastructure anywhere.
Yeah, okay. And then you go into the Hidden Hollow and it's wilderness.
Yes, and that is wonderful too, because it's a remnant of what used to be in Salt Lake when the first settlers came in. And of course, what unites it all is Parley's Creek and now the trail. And the trail that's the Pratt Trail that's coming down from the Bonneville shoreline eventually to the Jordan River. And this is a segment of it. And what I wanted people to see is I wanted people to actually be able to stand at one of my overlooks and see the source of the water in the mountains, then you can visually follow the riparian corridor down through the park, through Parley's Historic Nature Park with a canyon, and then through Sugar House Park, because it's the only tree-lined area coming down, and so it's very clear. Then, of course, what happens is the highway cuts that off, too. And so Parley's Creek disappears in a culvert under the road, and it's exactly at that point that the overlook occurs, so that you can look back and see that.
So what kind of physical elements are you going to be using to build this out? Or are you going to be working with natural elements?
Well, the truth is, I wanted the project to be an overlay of history and culture, of biology, so that the plantings that we used would attract wildlife. And so it's not any one thing, but basically what is flowing through the entire project, and of course there are two images that relate to the history of Salt Lake. One is a sago lily, and then the other one is this snake, snow snake. And that is a reference to Erastus Snow, who was in the first party of settlers in July 1847. And, of course, in those days, they were it wasn't easy to get here. They were hacking their way through thickets. And this man, in his journal, tells the story about how he came face to face with a rattlesnake that was rattling. And he says he thanked him for the warning and retreated. And I thought that was such a wonderful story because he didn't kill the snake.
That would be my first instinct.
Well, it's everybody's first instinct. When we feel threatened, we react badly. And this is kind of the source of all wars, is when we feel uncomfortable or threatened, we tend to strike back. And so, but he didn't. And so, of course, this image worked very well with the Hidden Hollow site, which is a hill. It's a steep slope that drops down because, of course, all of these historic creeks were in declivities. They were in natural ravines. And so they're below the level of the landscape. They're dropped down. They've been cutting down, you know, for many, many years.
So you see this path that looks like a snake, is that?
Well, basically, the snake is very functional. It's a snake that isn't a snake. It's a pattern of a snake that's broken up into segments of retaining walls and waterfalls. And basically, again, a functional infrastructure. The idea that we wanted to pursue was that we might be able to harvest stormwater off the roofs of surrounding buildings and parking lots, and then take that water, bring it down through a series of waterfalls that are actually part of the snake, and then each of these falls refers to the journey. And so one is in the form of a snake rattle and a beehive. The other one refers to the canyon and has rocky water splashing over rocks. And then the third one is a spillway, very much like the industries that were arrayed along Parley's Creek. And then when this water comes down into the neck and head of the snake, it goes out into the wet meadow that's already there and eventually adds water that recharges Parley Creek, which has now emerged in another culvert under the road, and it goes into Hidden Hollow.
This is very much ecological stewardship.
Well, very much, and particularly on the Hidden Hollow side of the road, where you have a chance to do a great deal of biological restoration by putting in native plants. You can attract, you know, specific birds and butterflies and build on the work that's already been done there. All of the native plantings by Ty Harrison at Westminster College and Lynn Olson from Pratt Trails. I mean, this project has a long history at this point.
And that's right. The folks from Parley's Rails Trails and Tunnels Coalition, the Pratt Coalition, heavily involved, in fact, raising money to make sure this project doesn't stall out in terms of funding.
That's right. That's right.
So I'm curious about how you come to this type of art as an artist. Was it the land, the landscape, the plants, or was it the chance to put an artistic, your own artistic flourish on a natural creation? How do you get there? How do you say, you know, when you're in art school, I think I'm going to work with infrastructure in cities?
Well, you know, it's something that evolves. I think one of the defining moments was I began as a minimal painter and sculptor. And when I put a 200-foot steel structure out in the landscape and came back, one of the things I noticed was how natural color and light was affecting the art color. I also noticed after a couple of years how the wetter areas were becoming covered with moss, how pine needles were accumulating in some sections and you were beginning to get soil and other plants growing there, that animals actually moved in under the structure, used it as a roof. And so I began to notice this interaction that I had done something as a human being, but that it was being used by nature in other ways. And so even though I hadn't intended that at first, I picked up on that and then began working with nature.
Well, and nature ultimately reclaims anything civilization builds up, it seems like.
Well, it does and it doesn't. It breaks it down, but it's always a process of breaking down and building up. So something is dying, but something else is being born. And for me, this is not a bad thing.
Now, you mentioned the snake, and I wanted to talk about the seagull lily in the draw at Sugar House. Tell us about how that figures into what you're planning.
Well, the stem of the lily is the actual trail. And what makes that stem sculptural is that it's following this beautiful topography that already exists in Sugar House Park. But until there's an object defining it, and I think people are going to be very stunned when it's actually built, you don't see the beautiful flow of the land as clearly as when there's a path following it. And what happens is that path will drop out of sight and then reappear because of the flow of the land. And of course, and then there's a second slender leaf that goes down to the existing road. When you get down to where the crossing is, that's where the flower occurs. Now, because it's an underground crossing, basically you need a dam to keep water out of the tunnel. This is your lowest point in the landscape. And so there's another grassy berm that flows all around the flower, and then the flower is also sculptural because that's flowing up on top of these grassy berms. And so if you look at a drawing, it looks like something flat on a piece of paper, but in reality, when it's built, it will flow with the land. And what will happen is the trail, which will be a typical ASHTO ADA trail, you know, according to those standards, federal standards, that will be the stem, and that will pass right through the flower, go through the tunnel, and then out into Hidden Hollow.
Where does this project, the Draw Out Sugar House, fall into the bulk of your work?
Well, you know, each project for me is unique and different. There are no two alike. And every one of them is a response to a specific place, a specific group of users, and, you know, and the landscape. What I see in the landscape, and of course, one of the things that I see in the landscape is the natural Parley's Creek, before it comes into that beautiful pond, is very serpentine in its form. Water, in most cultures, has the same name as snake. And that's because of the way the water flows back and forth. So basically, this project was generated by the landscape that was right in front of me. The very dramatic mountains, beautiful Parley's Creek coming down, fantastic topography in Sugar House Park, and then the nature corridor.
This kind of art, I mean, all art is creation, and every artist is like a mini god, but you're actually playing with the environment, with the planet. Does that give you a sense of power?
No, actually, just the opposite. I always feel that my work just responds to what's already there, and that basically, I'm just a set of ears and eyes that I listen to what people are telling me. In this case, I see what people have done for the past, 15 years or more, and just try to do something that's appropriate. And that's why, you see, I'm not afraid. I don't worry about consistency. It doesn't bother me that the sago lily and the snake are so different because they're responding to very different situations. I want this lily to fit into the park. And one of the other things I noticed when I was spending time in Sugar House Park were the beautiful parterre gardens, which are very traditional, where you have plantings and patterns. And this lily is very much like that. And it isn't necessarily all one thing. There really hasn't been any design development on this project yet, but I want it to absolutely be part of the park, not stand out like a sore thumb. It just fit in naturally.
Well, one of the things that I was impressed with in terms of your preparation and putting together this plan before you were even awarded the commission was that you did spend time here and you read pioneer journals. Why was that important? Why not just, some plants here, some plants there, a trail?
Well, I don't think that's a very good way to work. I think you need to discover the heart and soul of the place. And this is a very, very special place, and you need to understand that well before you try to do anything. I will continue to study and talk to people. I mean, I'm just beginning. And that's very important to me, is that people like what I do and that it fits into its place.
When will this be built?
I believe it has to go into construction sometime in 2008.
And how long do you expect it to take to be completed?
It's difficult to know because there are three basic parts. There's, of course, a major UDOT part, which will be the crossing itself. And so there will be, I guess, some disruption of 1300 East when that tunnel goes in. And as far as I know, that tunnel isn't even designed. And I of course, am hoping that it won't be something that's just bought out of a catalog or a traditional, you know, underground passage. What I had hoped for in the beginning was I looked at canyons, and I looked at rocky walls, and I looked at that kind of diffused sunlight that you get in Zion, and the beautiful color of the rock, and also the spring line where you get lines of plantings where the water seeps through the rock. Now, initially, that crossing was designed to be open to light and air so that the roadway was passing over the crossing on two slab bridges. And then the median, which unfortunately no longer exists, but the median was going to be cut out and open up that tunnel to natural sunlight. And at that point, it was conceived of as a wildlife corridor as well as a human passage under the road.
That's changed?
That's changed. UDOT has reconfigured the highway. I think they've created some new left turn storage or something like that, and the media, it's no longer possible to do this, and so it's going to be you know, totally roofed over and enclosed. But I'm still trying to think about how to give the sense of being at Zion when you go under the road and not just, you know, some engineered structure.
Well, Patricia, thank you for giving us some time and an update on the draw at Sugar House. Best of luck with getting the project off the ground.
Thank you very much.
That's Patricia Johansson, environmental artist, who's been commissioned to do the draw at Sugar House. You can learn more at her website, patriciajohansson.com, and there is a link on the Midday Metro page.